The following is a message from George Trujillo, a data strategist at DataStax. As a reminder, DataStax is the only financial sponsor of Data Mesh Radio and the Data Mesh Learning community at this time. I work with George, and I would highly recommend speaking with him. It's always a fun conversation.
One of the key value propositions of a data mesh is empowering lines of business to innovate with data. So it's been really exciting for me personally to see data mesh in practice and how it's maturing. This is a significant organizational transformation, so it must be well understood. Empowering developers, analysts, and data scientists with downstream data has been part of my personal data journey that reemphasized the importance of reducing complexity in real-time data ecosystems and the criticality of picking the right real-time data technology stack. I'm always open and welcome the opportunity to share experiences and ideas around executing a data mesh strategy. Feel free to email or connect with me on LinkedIn if you'd like to talk about real-time data ecosystems, data management strategies, or data mesh. The contact information can be found in the notes below. Thank you.
A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Hurlman, sponsored by Starburst. This is Adrian Estala, VP and Field CDO at Starburst, and host of Data Mesh TV. Starburst is the leading contributor to Trino, the open source project, and the Data Mesh for Dummies book that I co-wrote with Colleen Tarto and Andy Mott. To claim your free book, head over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio, a part of the Data as a Product podcast network, is a free community resource provided by DataStax. Data Mesh Radio is produced and hosted by Scott Hurlman, the co-founder of the Data Mesh Learning community. This podcast is designed to help you get up to speed on a number of data mesh related topics. Hopefully, you find it useful. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in this episode? I interviewed Blanca Mayayo, who's a product manager of data platforms, and Pablo Alvarez Doval, who's the lead of data platforms and principal data architect at the consulting company Plain Concepts. So some key takeaways and thoughts from Pablo and Blanca's point of view. I'm combining both of what they said into one single point of view to make it a little easier. So number one, it's easy to fall into adding fit-for-purpose capabilities to your data platform, but don't. Stay focused on managing your platform as a product. All aspects of it have life cycles. And you can't try to fit every use case, especially before there is a need. Number two, if transformation, especially data transformation, is not tied to the business strategy, that is a major recipe for failure. You likely won't deliver good business outcomes. Number three, quote unquote, beware the proof of concept. Too many organizations and groups try to do a proof without the actual concept. What are you trying to prove, and how will you decide, measure, if you actually proved it? And what happens if you do prove it or you don't prove it? What are next steps? Those all need to be figured out ahead of time. And if you're going to go ahead either way, why do a proof of concept? Number four, you can have everything necessary for a data initiative to succeed lined up, the sponsors, the will, the budget, etc., and still fail. Nothing is 100%. Number five, three common data initiative failure modes would be the first, focusing only on the technology aspect and not does it meet needs and can we maintain and pay for it? The second, only treating it as an urgent tactical needs instead of playing into the broader data strategy. And the third, not considering how to actually do change management. So those are, again, some failure modes. Number six, your platform is a product too. Data as a product isn't just about mesh data products. Think about capability lifecycle and how you communicate upcoming changes, especially deprecation. and help users to migrate to new capabilities. Number 7, acclimatize people to change and evolution. This is something that's really was crystallized a few episodes ago, but this keeps coming up. Most people in data aren't good with, or are at least aren't used to, evolution, iteration, change, and preparing for said evolution because the cost of change for data has been so high. People just haven't done that. So we need to get them ready to be prepared and to think about it. Number 8, the most likely places to find reusability in your platform will be the mechanisms around data product production and maintenance. You know, the lineage, CI/CD, data quality monitoring, security and compliance, etc. Lastly, reuse is crucial for a data platform. Look to have data transformation and storage reuse, of course, but also really focus on providing templates and then let users create their own templates. The transformations and handling data don't need to be overly exposed to the users. With that bottom line up front done, let's jump into the interview. Okay, very excited for today's episode. I've got Blanca Mayayo, who is the product manager of data platforms, and I've got Pablo Alvarez Doval, who's the lead of the platform and principal data architects at Plain Concepts. And we're going to be talking about a couple of different things. They've got an interesting story because they were doing a lot more consulting work and started to see, you know, had started to build out kind of a reference architecture and platform. And they started to see more and more how difficult it can be, and that trying to do that over and over inside every client is going to be difficult. So they're kind of heading more into a product direction around it. But so we're going to talk about some things that they've learned around building a platform and how other people can think about that, some of the anti-patterns and things to help others prevent their mistakes and things like that. And that too much in this space, especially around data mesh, people are trying to fix things with data or with technology instead of actually address their challenges with the technology, and that it's not the thing that fixes everything. It's much more the thing that helps you to actually address what's coming up. So with that, I would love to turn it over to you two to kind of give a little bit of an introduction to yourself. Blanca, do you want to start with your...
Sure, Scott. Sure. Thanks a lot, Scott, for inviting us, for sharing our journey so far, and I'm really excited for this conversation. I'm currently product manager at Plain Concepts, building our product. But in the past, I've held several leadership positions, both on the engineering side, more kind of traditional software engineering side, and then I started to move to transition more towards data and data products, and across different industries like telco, retail, consumer goods, and so on.
Thanks, Scott, for having us here. My name, as you just said, is Pablo Alvarez, and I am leading our CIDRA initiative at Plain Concepts, which you very rightly described as an internal initiative that kind of span into life, into a product cycle. I'm coming mostly from a pure technical background, both traditional development and data background, but my role evolved a little bit over the years for a little bit of consulting, not just the development side. So I've been lucky enough to help quite a few of our customers in different industries in implementing not just their data platforms and the tech, but also guiding them through the initial strategy steps, which has also provided a lot of insights for us for building the product, and a very, very rich personal experience as well. So yeah, we could say it's a little bit of a mix between the purely technical and, you know, more business side.
Yeah, and I think an interesting place that we can jump off into is what about what you've learned building the platform. A lot of what we're hearing from people coming on, there's more and more people who are literally saying that their platform has moved further and further away from technology and is more and more about reducing just straight up friction and ways of working, and that the point of it is to make it so that onboarding is easier. But that's, when I've had the conversations, it feels like it's a little bit customized, or it's a bit of each organization is so different in their ways of working around what the developers expect. So I would love to kind of talk to you about what you've learned from building that these different platforms and helping out these different customers. And then how can you abstract that into a platform so that you can actually serve multiple people? So I think let's start with what were the big challenges that you were trying to tackle first, and kind of some of the learnings? And I'll just pepper in questions as you're saying lots of interesting things as we're going down the path to that.
Blanca, do you want to start? Do you want me to start on this one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I have. I like to think about this from the perspective over the past years, because we've been working with customers and building, as you mentioned, this reference architecture for several years, and it has happened more or less the same that we are seeing also on a macro level, right? For in the industry, whatsoever. Like, there was first a diverging phase where we tried to create use cases for customers in not really in a product mindset, but really trying to do fit for purpose projects for our customers. And then we were basically building or creating new solutions, some new solutions arose. Then this need for decentralization, for working with customers organized in different domains appeared, which posed more needs again to customize, to split, to divide. And then after that, we realized that we needed to start the convergence phase. Okay, so after this diverging phase, we had to go to this converging phase. And this for this, basically, we have applied the two big principles that Samak very well explains and outlines in her book, and it's the one about product thinking and the one about platform thinking. So especially how to start to create some boundaries of what we are building, how to really use reusability, how to really start with the why before just bluntly putting functionality one on top of the other, right? So I think I like to think about our journey and this sense, okay, of these two phases more or less. And I think we are definitely in this converting phase, but of course, at the same time, trying to build and accompany our customers with new business use cases, of course.
Yeah, if I may. I think there is something very interesting in what Blanca just mentioned, which I think, taken from the perspective of where we were 6 years ago when we started with the beginnings of the platform to where we are now, it is quite interesting. It's the fact that at some point we had to start deciding what features we didn't really want to have, because we built them in the first place just to solve very specific challenges for very specific customers. We were running in a little bit of a tactical mode. Yes, we had this idea that I think a lot of different consulting companies and service providers had, which is, okay, let's build this reference architecture and let's make a lot of accelerators and modules that can allow us to replicate this. But at some point, we realized that this was creating this divergence that Blanca is talking about. We were just focusing on increasing the breadth of the platform, in a sense. And then we really needed to start filtering out what's really needed for the goals we had. And I think, and Blanca, I think you might also have a very powerful vision from your roadmap management role. But I think one of the key challenges we had, especially over the last 2 years, was deciding what really works towards the vision of having all the customers running the same platform, the same basics, but empowering them to build the data products on top of that. And it's definitely more complex than it seems, because there's a lot of things that might come as independent requirements from a customer for very, very, very tactical thing that let's be honest, you need to tackle because they are customers, but they may not align 100% with the platform. So there comes a little bit of a challenge there. Just wanted to point out that because I think that was implied on Blanca's point, and it really...
It's a lot about trade-offs.
Makes me think about a certain set of stories, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that point of this is something that Jamak has kind of talked about, and a lot of people who are building out their platform have talked about, of your platform, you know, provides affordances, it provides capabilities. It can't have 100% coverage, because if it does, it's just a nightmare to build, maintain, and use. And so when people need to go outside of it, you have extensibility, right? So that people can actually have it interact, right? It's not such in such a tight box that nothing can go in and out. It is about making that a something that people can leverage the parts that are going to be useful to them. And you want to encourage them, and you want to extract from them, why aren't they doing it for, like, what capabilities do they need? You need that back and forth communication. You don't want somebody just going and creating shadow IT for the sake of shadow IT. But sometimes that shadow IT is necessary because, okay, this team needs to run this thing at, you know, they need a, 500 node Spark cluster. Your platform may not be able to support something that crazy, or they need to be able to spin it up in minutes and spin it back down. And that, you know, scale up, scale down. You're just like, especially if you're running it in your own AWS account or whatever, it can cause all sorts of havoc to support that for multiple customers. So I would love to hear about what, like, I want to get into the reuse, because I think that's the thing that's the most helpful for people, of like identifying and then abstracting so that you can find the patterns. But I would love to start with, Pablo, something you said about what do we not want to support? What do we want to remove? Like, how have you found those things? And then how do you communicate that as well? Where somebody said, but I was using this thing and you're telling me it's going away. I'd love to understand identification and then communication around.
Yeah, no, I was just going to share what I think is one of the several instances where we had a scenario like that. So as I mentioned, we have been running this platform for quite a long time already. It's been more than 6 years. And at the beginning, well, it has suffered a lot of, let's just say that it has suffered a lot of technical transformations and evolution. Back when we started, it was all based on Hadoop clusters. And now we're running Databricks, so you can imagine there has been a lot of transition. And one of the requirements that a couple of companies from finance asked us at the beginning, quite a few years ago, was to enable ciphering and encryption at rest, which was not supported by default in HDInsight, not in the initial versions of Databricks. Now, it came a moment where we were supporting that as a particular piece when there were other commercial solutions and open source solutions available built on top of that. So even just being precise enough with the messaging to the customers of saying, yes, you have invested in building this because this was not an option back then and you were using our solution, but now it makes sense to rely on the solution of the product, the underlying product, or this technology, this open source technology. It takes a little bit of skills in communicating why we are making this roadmap change, where we are deprecating a feature, but providing an alternative feature for that. Similar to that, we are trying as much as possible always to rely on as many reputable, established open source projects and initiatives. So for testing, we had also a functionality, a system for implementing the testing of the data and validations of the data as they came into the platform. But, you know, technology is evolving, fantastic products come every day, and we've seen this amazing piece of software, which is Great Expectations, and we just said, okay, let's bring it into the platform, let's use it, but let's see how we can make this fit well to the customers that are already using our previous solution, because we had to fill the gap that was in the technology somehow. And it's interesting because, and Blanca probably will be able to give us more details into this because it's her day to day, but we don't just have to support our customers, our end customers and their development teams, but we also have to support the development teams of the customers and in some cases our partners, which are also building on top of the platform. So it creates a lot of challenges in terms of communicating what we want to have, of doing a little bit of, in certain aspects, doing a little bit of committee-based steering mechanism. So we ensure that we are not impacting severely any of these partners or customers. But at the same time, we have to do a little bit of an act of convincing them, of saying, yeah, but understand that this technology is better for us, or the roadmap is better, it's going to be more stable, or whatever. And these are just the easy bits, which are the specific bits that can be replaced by an existing technology, whether it's open source or not. But in some cases, very minimal cases, but in some cases, back then, years ago, we decided a route that was not the right route, and we need to change direction. And at some point, you have customers going for that route. So you have to start telling them, yeah, maybe we are going to be changing this. This is not nothing new. This is fairly standard for any product-based company, but for us it's new because, again, our background is not from a product company, but more from the consulting services part. So Blanca, maybe you have a lot more of feedback on this.
I would also add one, what I perceive myself as one of the big failure modes of any kind of big change transformation initiative is that it's not considered as a business strategic initiative. Sometimes we know when this is happening because they approach to us with a very tactical KPI or a very tactical proposal for a specific use case, okay? Or maybe even not even that, not even because of a tactical new solution, but just urgent need because one license from a vendor is, for example, expiring in a few months, okay? So when we detect these kind of things, we know that we need to do heavy work with our customers to let them understand that our platform is built to be a strategic platform for the longer term, is built to be future-proof, is built to be extensible and to allow all this decentralization and all this scaling up in this ordered way. So basically, in that sense, we sometimes need to really dig deeper into the why they want X feature, because sometimes they approach to us, say, okay, I want, I don't know, a Cosmos DB database for this use case. But then we need to dig really deeper. Why? What do you really want to achieve here? What else do you want to achieve? Not let them out of that specific use case and think really beyond that. And this is a heavy work that we need to do of communicating with our customers here and mostly stakeholders in the customers. This is also another important distinction, not anyone in the company, but you know, important stakeholders, to really make sure that they understand our collaboration mode, that they will be co-creators of this future-proof platform with us, and that sometimes we will need to take tough decisions and some very tactical things. We will need to find another approach that it maybe is not supported via the full standard track. That maybe we can find other alternatives for implementing this. But I think it's a matter of finding the proper governance, so to say, internally, to say, okay, this is how we are going to work with this customer. Even this is, we cannot really work with this customer because we are completely misaligned in this sense, and this platform is not going to fit their purpose by any means.
One question I would have then is, it sounds like from a lot of what you're saying, in most cases, you're not removing a capability as much as maybe replacing or saying, hey, we'll help you bring in and use this other thing versus just kind of fully sunsetting a capability. Is that because, I mean, I think for internal customers, we might have a little bit more leeway to be like, hey, we've just got to cut this off. But the other question about that is when you think about these communicating these changes, you know, having the software engineering background, right? You are used to there being changes like microservices and things like that. There's changes. People aren't used to that in data, right? People aren't used to saying, hey, this thing isn't serving our needs anymore. So we need to evolve it, not, okay, we're going to completely replace this thing. We need to evolve it to get to where it needs to go. So how have you worked with them on that actual replacing, and how have you worked on the communication? And has that been difficult to get people kind of in the mindset of, oh, I need to actually be flexible and, you know, have some agility around this if I actually want to be scalable and stay competitive?
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good point, Scott, here, because I think it really connects with one of our biggest pain points as a company and as a product. First of all, as Blanca said before, we always strive to work in a strategic projects, in something that is really going to impact the company. And we are fortunate that we have a lot of success stories in very different industries, and we have learned from them good stories and how things work when they work correctly. But we also have a lot of scenarios where they haven't gone so well. And I have one that reflects very well on that exact scenario where the data teams normally are not expecting a replacement in technology and even are very reluctant in the evolutionary changes to the technology. Obviously, the names will be kept in the dark, but one very, very large customer of us, one of our biggest customers in terms of business with them, and they are a fantastic customer. They are working on the law sector, they are a law firm, and they had this very interesting idea of building certain law cases as a product, as a service. On part of the platform. So they wanted to build a data product that was running this specific cases, in this particular case, class actions. So it was the concept of a class action as a service. So we engaged with this company at a very, very good level, C-level executive. So we had the right connections. We had the right engagement in terms of being able to go to the company, do knowledge transfer sessions, keep the people engaged. And we just started working on the project. So we had the initiative with the platform, with the data products connected on top of it for building this solution. And the only team that was reluctant to the change, that didn't really understand the needs for the new model of deploying applications, of building and deploying the change management cycle, the new ways of working in general, was precisely the data team. And they were extremely reluctant to the change. And it's not by any means this team's fault, because this we have seen over and over. It's a normal traction issue on data teams, which I think it's perfectly understandable for all of us, and I'm myself in that group who have been there. But I think it really reflected on one of the maintenance we have, which is, you cannot do this kind of projects if you don't have the whole company and all the teams, even the non-technical teams, going together and understanding what you are building, what you are doing, what's the reason of this change. In this particular case, we had the right connections, but there was challenges in making this flowing through the organization. And I can mention this particular team, this data team, as, let's say, a little bit of laggards in terms of understanding the need for the change. But we have seen this in many other data teams. Normally, it's data teams. It's funny that, at least from my point of view, that it is the development teams, the traditional software development teams, the ones that understand properly why you are building this kind of architectures, this kind of approach, iterative approach, this kind of governance models for change management, etc., than the more traditional data team. So I fully agree with you. Unfortunately, I don't have any kind of good advice on this, because it just happens from time to time to go to a customer where everything is going perfectly fine. Again, right connections, right engagement. And for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. And it's a challenge you have to work. And from our point of view, it's something that we cannot really do. It really needs to come from the company, from the own company. We can support them. We can just offer, you know, to be their guide, do as many knowledge transfer sessions, try to inspire. But in the end, it really needs to come from the company.
Sure. Yeah, I would just like to add to what you mentioned and Pablo mentioned about this, well, this profile that is frequently found, especially coming from the most traditional part of data, more reluctant to changes, not so used to, you know, engineering, like modern engineering practices, cross-cutting concerns around software engineering. I believe personally, I've been also managing big initiatives, for example, of operational excellence, not directly related to intensive data usage. And I think there's a big, big, big parallelism in both things. But well, apart from that, I would like also to call out about the other side of the spectrum. So sometimes, for example, we go to a customer. Usually in this case, the customers really want to do something big and they know they are posing this as a really business, big challenge with big, you know, change management and so on and so on and support from executives. But then you have, for example, a team of very skilled architects, software architects or you know, of engineers, that they have their own set of technologies that they would like to explore. So they see like a way to say, okay, now I'm going to try this bleeding edge technologies because this is a big initiative. And then it's sometimes really difficult to make them understand that when working with a platform, you really, and especially a platform that we package, it's a, even a higher level of abstraction because we package that platform so that the customers can administer the platforms themselves. We need to really be very strict with, you know, proven technologies, stable technologies, and so on, and even technologies that are really easy to manage, like, for example, do we prefer orchestration and the need to have or container orchestration and the need to have very experts administering that, or shall we go to managed services, cloud managed services that are much easier to operate in the end with much less expertise? And then there's this, I would say, clash of egos, so to say, in technology, because, and especially the data world has so filled in with, new technologies every week, driven through a lot of hype sometimes, this is the latest technology, all the rest are dead. So all this kind of mindset, sometimes we are seeing that this is also impacting, and this is being an obstacle to really buying in. The need to create a common self-shared platform with reusage, all these kind of things, with all these principles, so that we can really accelerate on the time to market to really deliver data products. So I can see both sides of the spectrum, and neither of them. I think we need to find the right balance of curious developers, curious people, engineers that really want to test new things, risk a little bit because they know they are going to gain, but at the same time, very conscious of what it takes, with a strong product mindset as well, of what it takes to really build a product and maintain that.
Yeah, if we could talk about, head into identifying again reuse, because one of the things that I'm finding is when I talk to people, that if they started to go with the most kind of data mature teams, that they build a platform that isn't actually usable by, kind of the vast majority of people. But if you start with the really, really legacy teams, then are you trying to do all the maturity through the platform side instead of actually upskilling and training, which you'd rather do that instead of trying to solve for, can my dog come on and use your platform? That's probably not the best use case, right? She's just going to, I tried to teach her how to use buttons to communicate and stuff, and she just would spam the buttons because it meant that she got attention. So I don't think she'd be that good at using your platform. But how do we start to find those patterns of, what are the identifiers that you see, and how do you then abstract them away to do exactly what you talked about earlier of, you were kind of doing things in project mode of, I'm trying to solve this boxed problem, instead of, I'm trying to solve this problem that comes up repeatedly and trying to solve it, in a way that is applicable to everybody and that isn't, we're going to give you 30% of what you want and that's considered solved, versus can we cover most of what people want? And if there are specific needs, we can go outside the platform, or we can bring in specific things for that. So that identifying reuse, I haven't heard anybody kind of give really good signals of what is the thing, how do you abstract away from all the different use cases to find those signals?
I think that's a very good question. And unfortunately, I don't have a very good answer for it. Let me clarify. As I told you, we started this project kind of organically. So what we had in mind initially was to create something that would automate the main activities that were constantly, that we were seeing or perceiving that were constantly disregarded on when creating data products. And with that, I mean ensuring that all the data products had the same deployment model, that had proper CI/CD, that all the data products had the same way of treating the credentials and secrets, etc., that all data products could use the same mechanism for lineage tracking, for glossary of terms, that all the data products had same cost attribution. So we just built something, being honest, that worked for us. And again, remember that this was initially just an accelerator for projects built from our company's point of view, by other teams in our company, but just by our company. So that was the kind of the layer one of reuse. We wanted to ensure that we had a mechanism that allowed any of either our engineers or the customer engineers wanting to create a proof of concept. They could create it, making sure that it was everything created in the same way, same approach, in a secure fashion, with the same governance layers, etc. But that was kind of too technical. The second layer of reuse came with templatization. So we use templatization a lot, and Blanca probably will give you a lot more of details from that than I could give you. But the main idea is we have templates for the what we call the data products, the client applications, which is our term for data products. And these templates encapsulate how they will be created, what we are going to be creating, and what they will be doing. So for example, and I will not get into the details, but we're just looking for a way of encapsulating, okay, I want to create a BI application. And I don't care if it's a finance, HR, operations. I just want a BI application, and I can install it several times. And just by configuration, select what I want to have in that application, and the platform would move the data around, create, if it's Power BI, the workspaces, whatever. Then we identify other scenarios. So we identified a lot of appetite for knowledge mining. So we built a template for building with knowledge mining models connected as well to the core of the platform. And we started creating a catalog. And then the third kind of layer for this reuse came when we shared this, not just the catalog of templates, but the SDK, the software development kit we used to create this, to the customers. And then the customers can create their own templates that they are going to then to reuse. Remember when I was talking about the class action as a service, this particular product this customer of us implemented on the on their platform or on their instance of the platform? Well, they did that. They created using the SDK their specific templates, so they could instance several instances of this data product. But every one of them has the same lineage capabilities, cost attribution. So it's in the end, it's all these technical concepts that we are encapsulating, reusing, etc. So it's properly, even though we are trying to little by little go up in the layer of abstraction, it's still pretty much a very technical platform. And what we try to solve, I think what we achieve to solve the most is the technical reutilization. So Blanca, maybe you have more details to bring here, but
yeah, maybe not on the technical side, just not to go too deep into that. But what Pablo is mentioning also has had heavy implications in even the way we are currently organized as inside the company. Okay, because this mentality, as I mentioned, this mindset of product reusability, sustainability, platform, all this kind of X thinking requires the proper mindset on people. And so we used to work so that we had the central team working on the platform and then different teams across the company as part of professional services working for so building these data products together with the platform. We even had a very open development approach so that even these teams could open pull requests to our platform and to improve the capabilities, okay, in case we didn't have the capacity. From the platform, the capacity was not there. But what really was demonstrated is that only the people with the right mindset and the right skills and really the intention to learn about technically about the platform and to take these trade-offs about to use this technology versus to stick to what the platform is reusing is very, very important and cannot be understated. And somehow we learned it along our way. We then really invested a lot internally in our team in onboarding, upskilling team members, making sure people, you know, rotate from projects to product so that they all both have the perspective of the other. Okay, when building, when developing things. And this is something that is, I would say, is one of the biggest learnings, at least from the perspective of building the product as an initial consulting or professional services company.
Yeah, if I may add something to this, which I think is interesting, is we are in a little bit of a peculiar a scenario here because we are building a product that is deployed and is owned by the customers. So it's their data platform. Once it's deployed on their Azure environment, it's their data platform. but it has a certain set of rules, because if you want to keep it updated, etc., well, it needs to be kept supported. And this creates an interesting challenge, which at some point it has been a decision factor whether a specific prospect really wanted or was able to use our platform or not, which is the perception on their technical and engineering teams. So, and to put a very simple example, but this happened quite a few times already. Imagine we go to a customer, they have the appetite to be, to have this acceleration, to have this on their environment, to have the data platform, and they want our help. But as Blanca was saying a couple of minutes ago, this doesn't fully align with the set of technologies that the chief enterprise architect or the data team wants to use, or at a higher level in the organization, some key individuals from a technical point of view. That might create a challenge because obviously, from our point of view, as much as we wanted to help them and support them, the platform at this stage, it is a product, it is what it is, and it cannot be amended or made flexible. And it has created some scenarios in which the platform, in some cases, has been approved and deployed on customers because they really saw the value and the acceleration, and they could overcome some problems they had with, in many cases, with previous implementations, in-house implementations of the platform. But then you have to be extremely careful and understanding and dedicate a lot of time to nurture the relationship with the.
So sorry about that audio issue there. Hopefully in post you're hearing this and that the editing was flawless and that it was perfect, but apologies if there's a little bit of a break here. But so I think this could actually be a good transition point into talking about kind of anti-patterns. One thing we talked about in the pre-call was trying to treat technology as if it's the thing that solves the challenge or the problems. But what if somebody out there is building their own data platform? You've gone down some paths that weren't exactly what you would choose if you were able to do that again. Everybody has that. But like, what are the anti-patterns, or what are the things that you would tell people to hopefully avoid or to keep an eye out for, or what are the signals that you've already hit an anti-pattern and that you don't exactly know it yet, but it's going to come to haunt you and, you know, 6 months time or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, maybe not so much on anti-patterns, but typical failure modes, okay? Because I think we see a lot of manifestations of deeper problems. We all know the typical problem of investment that is not properly, maintained over time, therefore the initiative dies, lack of collaboration between different teams, difficulties in maintaining the current landscape, or too much complication, lack of alignment with business. All these, in the end, for me, are just manifestations of deeper problems. And for me, I would crystallize maybe in three kind of failure modes, generally. For me, one of them we discussed already, which is basically considering a data strategy initiative as purely from the technological point of view. So it's not just about uncorrelated OKRs with no vision and just focused on the specific technology. Also, it's not only about the X technologies, like for example, the bleeding edge technologies on data. It's also about technologies, cross-cutting concerns technologies that are needed absolutely a must for any kind of software initiative as well. I'm speaking here about, operational excellence in general, from cost management to observability, deployability, maintainability, and so on. Okay, so this would be for me the first failure mode. Then the second is basically considering such a change as something that is a short-term objective, okay, or an urgent tactical need, Okay, so we mentioned most of the times, sometimes they approach to us because, well, a license with an X vendor is expiring soon, so we need to they need somehow to replace that. Okay, no, this is just a tactical objective, but it needs to have a proper vision, and it's a vision that should be really looking forward in the future, planned, carefully aligned, and so on. And then for me, the third failure mode is basically not considering change management at all. Most of these initiatives as well, they are just, okay, we will replace this, by this date. And again, speaking or very focused around specific technologies or specific pieces of infrastructure. And yeah, there's all that is related basically to managing change properly. Change is not, change is not pushed. Change needs communicated. So basically, urgency needs to communicate it to start change. You need to consider the incentives in the first phase. You need to get early wins. You need to validate those. And once you get a proper mass of adopters, then you can try to start experimenting with disincentivizing the use of the common platform, but only then. Okay, no, not right at the start. So it doesn't work like this way. So I think for me, these are the critical failure modes. And I would also add that these failure modes are absolutely nothing specific or exclusive from data transformation projects. I've seen exactly the same failure modes, for example, in big operational excellence transformation in companies. Actually, there are a lot, for me, there are a lot of parallelisms in good and in bad patterns that we want to avoid.
Yeah, I agree with these three failure modes that Blanca is mentioning, and going to specific examples and specific, as you said, anti-patterns, right? I always start with the same one because this is something I see recurrently over and over. And maybe this is not, there is not a lot of value for many of the listeners of your podcast, Scott, here, because most of them they work on their data platform on just one single environment. But even in those cases, I would just say one big thing. Beware of the proof of concept as general, as the magical word, right? We go to many customers, to many companies, in many cases, large companies, hand in hand with other vendors, with providers, with very big companies in the area, wanting to do a proof of concept of a data mesh architecture or a proof of concept of a data platform, of an internal platform. And as Blanca was saying earlier, you need to have a goal. You need to have to do this for a reason and be part of a plan. If you're starting your journey based on, okay, here you have X budget, for a small proof of concept, let's evaluate the technology and then let's make it grow. You are cutting so many corners and you don't have a goal. You don't have the structure around it, which is not the technical one, which is the team, the measurement, the strategy in a sense. But I'm not trying to make it sound like the big uppercase strategy. I'm talking about the basics here. And that really is a double-edged sword because we see over and over that customers try to do it. They don't have anything to measure. And then 6 months down the line, 1 year down the line, the companies start asking themselves, do we have the need of changing our approach to data products? Do we have the need of building an internal data platform? And they will look back to that proof of concept that didn't have the meat to it. And sometimes, even though they are good for evaluating the tech aspects, sometimes these smaller proof of concepts, they are more, I think, harmful than beneficial because they leave this, you know, this aftertaste. They are not solving that problem. They don't have any real objective. So if you ask me about my number one anti-pattern is starting with the commercial aspects and starting with these smaller engagements, they might leave to wrong conclusions, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. I think Paul Andrew was the first one who said, absolutely, you know, proof of concepts are the worst. And a couple other people have said this. And I think one thing that in a lot of organizations, you have to do a proof of concept, right? You're no matter what the if we all had it where all of our organizations were flexible and understanding and would invest in all of these things. But what are you trying to prove out? Are you trying to prove a data set has value? Great. Good job. Are you trying to prove that you can actually build data products? Or are you trying to prove out like a minimum viable mesh of that you can actually build out data mesh, or that you can do like the data mesh implementation itself? Can you get the teams aligned? Can you get them working collaboratively? Can you get to a certain place? And, Sean Kaiser and Gustavo Drakenberg were on, and they said, you know, proving out data mesh and getting your first data product out the door, it's about a 6-month process in most organizations. If you're kind of skimping on some things, you might be able to get it out in 4 months. And for a lot of places, that's not acceptable. There are a lot of people who've come on who said, you can get something out in 6 to 9 weeks. But in a lot of cases, what it is that they're proving that they can figure out how to create data products. And then they start to iterate the strategy from there. And that's fine. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, but exactly what you said, and kind of Blanca, exactly what you said about like the data strategy from the purely technical point of view, or only the tactics instead of why are we doing this? What are we actually trying to achieve? If we're doing a proof of concept, we're not doing a proof of concept of data mesh. What is our strategy concept? How does this play into what we're actually trying to do as a business? Because, you know, this is not, unless you're blessed with just free money to throw at things and just play around and do interesting things, like it's so crucial. So I think one question I would have about what both of you just said is, how do you assess if you're ready for this, right? Because it's pretty easy to do, Pablo, exactly what you just said, of kind of head down a path, throw some money at it, and you weren't ready to actually take advantage of it. You weren't ready to do it. And so you're just going to create scar tissue if you ever want to actually do data mesh in the future. You know, I keep talking to a bunch of people who say when they start trying to say data mesh internally, it just creates all this confusion in everybody's back. So you never even actually mention data mesh to the business folks because it doesn't matter to them. That's the manifestation of how you're, that's kind of tactics, right? It is a very crucial part of your data strategy, but it isn't the data strategy, and your data strategy isn't your business strategy. So like if people are out there listening and are like, I want to do data mesh, like, what can you tell them to help them to evaluate if they're ready to do this? Because if we have a bunch of people that run down this path too early, we're just going to have a lot of failures. And that's bad for, I mean, we might be able to learn a lot from the anti-patterns of what everybody did, but it's bad because it's a lot of people's time and effort and things wasted.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's a lot of times where we explicitly tell some of potential customers, some prospects, don't go this route. You're not ready yet. And it's going to save you problems. And it's not your time for this, or not even the time. Maybe some cases it's not something that is going to solve your problems. Because I think the first thing we need to start always is, what are your pain points? Why your current approach, whatever it is not working? Because every mature organization, they are solving their data challenges one way or another. Maybe they are not efficient or effective at solving them. Maybe it's a matter of budget. Maybe it's a matter of being able to govern the projects in a way that they are more predictable in the delivery, increasing the quality. So first of all, you need to understand what you're trying to solve. If it's a company that it's, well, I've never seen a purely greenfield company in terms of data, they are all doing something. So you really need to understand what it is, the challenge. And if there is a tiny little hint that they might benefit from a data mesh approach, the next thing is, okay, tell me about your organization. Tell me about what's your leverage, what's your what sponsors do we have here? I told you about the perfect scenario. The perfect scenario, we had the budget, we had the sponsors, we had engagement, and it wasn't successful or not as successful as we would have liked it to be. So if you start already with one hand to the back because you don't have the sponsors or you don't have the budget, or the company doesn't have the will to do it, you're going to be dead in the water. So I think it's the first thing is doing a honest exercise of understanding the needs, whether you really need to do this or something more tactical, more departmental, etc. And also whether you have the tools, and the tools are not technology. And this is throwing stones at our own roof. This is because we built the technology, right? But that's not the thing. That's why we cannot say our technology solves data mesh, because that's the least important thing in data mesh. It is the rest of the aspects. It's the strategy, is the engagement, is the company, is the willing to do it, is the willing to innovate, is the teams. That's the way I see it. And maybe now, Blanca, yeah. Throw something at me.
I was thinking about a typical hint as well. And it's that it's not a golden rule, of course. It's not a really like an algorithm, but it depends on how the IT department is driven. So is the IT department perceived as a cost optimization kind of with a cost optimization driver, or is the IT department really seen as the fuel right hand to marketing to really empower and have the DNA, have data as a DNA in the company? So I think these are two radical things. And the other thing is also the approach to product mindset as well in the companies, because if we are speaking about the typical IT, centralized IT department with very bottom-up kind of initiatives, tactical, you will see absolutely no kind of product or very rarely product thinking and even less platform. Okay, the term platform may, you know, these guys may like it, but if it's not really well accompanied by really product thinking, why do you have a platform in the first place? And what is it helping you for? I think these are very bad smells that you can sense when you engage with the customers, I think.
Yeah, that product thinking. I mean, I had Ala Hale on recently. She came from like an actual physical goods space. I think even within data, when we start to think about product thinking, we look too much to just software instead of like, you know, there is an actual cost to production. There is, you really have to think about life cycle up front, and you have to think about not only does this solve the problem now, but is this going to degrade? And, you know, it's okay to have a patch, right? When you think about the thing, but that there's the communication around the expectations around what... We're rolling out this new thing. Is it because we just need to get this thing out today? And that's okay if that's the right strategy. It's not optimal, but nothing is in this world. And so that communication aspect, exactly what you're talking about, is the organization ready? Do they have the will to actually move away from trying to solve it with technology to solve it with communication? And that technology helps them once they've figured out, they've addressed, or they've identified what are the pain points, what are the challenges. So yeah, I'm totally in the same boat with both of you. So so we've covered a whole lot of different stuff here today, but is there anything we didn't cover or anything that you'd kind of want to wrap up the episode in general with?
It was fantastic. From my point of view, it's nothing I would add. It's brilliant.
No, also nothing on my side. I think we covered pretty much everything. We jumped a lot across different topics, and sometimes we reinforce some critical aspects. So I think it will be also clear to the audience.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I aim for. So, and then for the folks out there, I'm sure there are going to be people who would like to follow up with you. Where is the best place for that? You know, is it LinkedIn? And then what's the, what do you want them following up about if there's anything specific?
Well, I can be reached via LinkedIn, Blanca Mayayo. It's pretty straightforward, my name there. Basically, I'm super interested in exchanging experiences, conversations about, for example, how to work in this world as a vendor with a business, or the other way around, as a business with a vendor, trying to, you know, to achieve this the data strategy. Okay, which is okay. It's just a different flavor of the general challenge that we all are going through, right? And especially with this early stages of data mesh. And yeah, and also about, I'm very super interested about how to build self-service data platforms, this and exchange opinions about how to enable reusability, all these things that are really challenges that I think we are not super ready yet. Interoperability and yeah, all these kind of things.
Good. And from my point of view, from my part, Pablo Doval on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way of reaching me, and definitely open to any discussion around data in general, everything from the tech to the stories in the trenches, to discussion around what's the new approach and the hot new stuff. Anything, I'm always interested in interesting chats like this one, which was super enjoyable. So definitely open to anyone willing to talk about this.
Okay, and we'll drop links to your LinkedIn and stuff in the show notes as per usual. So again, thank you so much, Blanca and Pablo, for your time today. And thank you as well, everyone out there, for listening. I'd again like to thank my guests today, Blanca Mayayo, who's a product manager of data platforms, and Pablo Alvarez Doval, who's the lead of data platforms and principal data architect at the consulting company Plain Concepts. You can find a link to their LinkedIn in the show notes as per usual. Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening to another great guest on the Data Mesh Learning Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors, especially DataStax, who actually pays for me full-time to help out the Data Mesh community. If you're looking for a scalable, extremely cost-efficient, multi-data center, multi-cloud database offering and or an easy-to-scale data streaming offering, check DataStax out. There's a link in the show notes. If you want to get in touch with me, there's links in the show notes to go ahead and reach out. I would love to hear more about what you're doing with Data Mesh and how I can be helpful. So please do reach out and let me know, as well as if you'd like to be a guest. Check out the show notes for more information. Thanks so much.